This is episode 115 or 15 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast, and I feel like at least seven of them have begun with us trying to figure out what the heck happened in the Bears game played 48 hours before we tape. And here we are again, Arthur Arkus, talking about a crazy Bears loss, one that they let get away to the 49ers, falling to 5-7 and pretty much out of the playoff race. I'm Kevin Fishbane, one of your hosts on this wonderful podcast. Executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer Nick the intern on hand. Guests today, we're going to talk about the Washington game this weekend with Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan, and have a little fun in the second half of the show with Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report, just talking about stuff around the NFL and the Bears. Then Hub Arkus will join us at the end of the show, and we will make our picks for Sunday, see if the Bears can get that elusive home victory, 1-5 now at home, because they blew it and lost to the San Francisco 49ers, gave the 49ers their first road win of the year. And Arthur, it was just one of those games. We saw it in Detroit, we saw it at home against Minnesota, where the Bears were right there, and then just, you know, you don't expect Robbie Gould to miss a 36-yard field goal. You don't expect Blaine Gabbert to run 44 yards for a touchdown. And as good as the defense played, you should not expect that kind of miscommunication to lead to a 71-yard touchdown in overtime when the 49ers had done nothing through the air all day. How do you react to all that?
Well, I'm sort of confounded, but at this point, that seems like a kind of weekly refrain. So maybe I should just realize that this team, as a young and first year, new regime, maybe some of these growing pains should be expected. I credit the coaching staff for getting them ready to be in all these games, but I think that young teams and newly rebuilt or rebuilding teams need to kind of learn how to win games. So that's clearly what the Bears are still figuring it out, but it doesn't explain the home road disparity and what Kyle Long said about how they are such road warriors, because you need a little bit more grit to pull some of those out. So that just kind of leads me back to some of the confusion I mentioned.
Yeah, Kyle Long talked about how they put so much focus on going in on the road, being road warriors, as he said, and playing as the underdog. And there's that fight that's there that maybe they need to find to win at home. And maybe it'll take a crowd that doesn't expect them to win or has been disillusioned by them after that loss of 49ers that gets them going. I don't like to put a whole lot of stock in the type of emotional aspect to winning a game. Either you're talented and you make the plays or you're not. But I did find that kind of a striking comparison that he explained, because the Bears are 4-2 on the road this year. And as we get to Sunday's game, as we start breaking it down, it's going to be very similar to last week's. But Art, let's go ahead and break this thing down as we do every week in our three and out.
One, two, three. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Three's up.
Three.
All right, folks, as you know, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered from the previous game. This one, the 26-20 overtime loss to the 49ers. Arthur, start us off. You're positive.
Yeah, I'm going obvious, as I tend to do. I'm going with the second-round nose guard, Eddie Goldman. I thought he was the best Bears player on the field Sunday. We were told all week that the main objective on defense was to stop the run. Goldman set the tone early on and did it consistently, and also was the Bears' best pass rusher on Sunday. So a really encouraging sign, particularly for a player who seemed to kind of need one of these games to boost him up a little bit. I thought he was outstanding. Really did it all on special teams, too, with the blocked extra point.
Speaking of stopping the run, quick side story. I was talking to Jarvis Jenkins in the locker room last week, and I was interviewing for a story, and I turned my recorder off, thanked him for the interview, and I said, so what do you think for Saturday? What's the key to the game? Talking about North Carolina Clemson, because he's a Clemson alum and nuts fan, and he was like, stop the run, because he was so focused. I'm like, no, Jarvis, I don't care about your game on Sunday between the 49ers and Bears. I want to know how you're going to beat North Carolina. And then he got really into Clemson. You want to get Jarvis Jenkins talking, just talk about his Clemson Tigers. My positive was going to be the run defense, but I'll go on the other side, the running offense. You know, it was still tough sledding at times. I think there were still too many 1 or 2 yard gains when they should be 3, 4, 5 every time. But to get Forte Langford and Kadeem Carey going the way they did, I think is just a good sign. And especially the way that Jay Cutler was playing, you know, they need to get on that horse. And it worked out pretty well. All right, Arthur, I dare you to try to find one negative from that one.
Yeah, I really had to rack my brain. But I do come up, you know, I just said Goldman was the best player on the field for the Bears. The player that should have been the best player on the field was Alshon Jeffrey. I didn't think he helped out his quarterback enough. I mean, obviously he didn't. He had two big drops on third down, both potentially leaving points on the board. The one in the first half where he wasn't able to complete the process, whatever that means, is the one that sticks out in particular. And, you know, no Marquise Wilson, no Eddie Royal, no healthy Martellus Bennett. The Bears needed Jeffrey to be that guy that we've seen him prove he can be on occasion. I didn't feel he did it on Sunday.
Yeah, and I was going to talk about that drop on third down, and you said it to me in the press box. You tweeted that was going to be a play you could look back on, but it ended up being one of many plays. And my negative, right, it's not just the missed opportunities, it's the penalties on offense. You had the holding penalties, a false start, illegal formation, and the Bears had 5 possessions in a row with a penalty between the second quarter and the start of the fourth quarter. Those were 4 punts and a missed field goal. I mean, you just can't have that against a Niners team. They made it to the Niners territory 8 times and couldn't take advantage and score enough points to win. And here they are out of the playoff hunt. So, Arthur, what was your one moment that mattered?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a Blaine Gabbert scramble on third down, but not the one that you think. It was actually the one to begin that final drive in regulation for the 49ers. It's third and long. Willie Young gets a sack on first down. They allow, I think, an 8-yard completion to Anquan Boldin on second down, so they should be able to kind of pin their ears back. Yeah, they did it a little bit too much. Jarvis Jenkins took way too wide of a rush lane. There was a huge, huge hole for Gabbert to get loose for whatever it was, 9 yards, extend the drive. There were obviously 2 other Gabbert scrambles that loom large, but I thought it was that one where the Bears defense had a real shot to slam the door immediately. They weren't able to do it, and obviously it turned out to be kind of a precursor for what would happen next.
Yeah, great call on that. That was a play I was trying to look at as well when rewatching the game, and one of the many opportunities they had to get out of there with the victory. Now, if you're new to the show, we try to pick some unique moments, so we're not going to mention Robbie's, you know, obviously the missed field goal, the final touchdown. I will talk about a bit of an obvious one. It was one of the first plays of the game, that punt return. The fake punt return they ran it beautifully, and they designed it beautifully. It worked perfectly, and Leroy Reynolds, an obvious, unnecessary hold. And I went back and watched it, and not only was it unnecessary, Bryce Callahan didn't even have to go that way if he didn't want to. I mean, there was a lot of green in front of him, and that was just deflating. And yeah, it worked out. The Bears still were able to go up, you know, 3-0, then 6-0. They had good field position. But the problem with a play like that, Arthur, you can't do that play again. I mean, that's done. That's out of your playbook. Right. You get one shot at trying to, you know, throw that wrinkle, and they did it, and it worked. And, you know, for special teams, it's been awful all year long. They had that great play, and boy, I mean, if they go up 7-0 on something like that, that is just so big. And again, I don't like to talk about momentum because I don't think it's real at times, but that does make an impact, and that one just continues to stick out in my head as such a big moment in that game.
Yeah, good call, and it left the Bears as, I believe, one of 4 teams in the NFL without a return touchdown still. So you can't imagine they'll have a better opportunity than that one. And like you said, unnecessary is the key word because, you know, Callahan should have found the end zone without the Reynolds hold. And like you said, it really kind of took the air out of the stadium at that time.
You know, Arthur and I like to promise you listeners that we're not going to dwell too much on previous Bears games, wins or losses, because you could be listening to us Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday. You're already on to the next game, so that'll do it. We're done with the 49ers. Okay, Arthur? No more.
Works for me.
Can't do it. So now we're going to move on to the Washington Pro Football Squad. And this is the part of the podcast where I explain we are not going to refer to them by their what many consider a derogatory nickname. We won't do it in print, and we're going to do our best within the podcast to do that as well. It's Bears versus Washington, if you ask those of us at Chicago Football. It's an editorial decision that was made a year and a half ago when Chicago Football began. I support it, and I don't have a problem with it. I also don't have a problem with people that use the name and still support the team, and we'll use the, you know, many of our colleagues are going to use the name in print, and I don't have a problem with that either. Here's the thing. This is so simple. People are offended by it. That's all that matters. And a large percentage of people are offended by the name. And I've never actually heard a good argument to keep the name. I've heard You know, well, why weren't you offended to be offended by it before? Well, there's a lot of things in American history that it took people some time before they realized the hurt that it was bringing to people in our country, and then they changed and we evolve. I've heard, oh, it's nostalgia, it means something. That doesn't. It's a name of a football team. Talk about the easiest thing you can change. It's just a mascot. It's a mascot that is ridiculous and offends enough percentage of people in this country that should be changed. I think those are really the only two excuses I hear. And I call them excuses. I don't call them reasons to keep the name, because again, it's insane that it still exists today and that it's celebrated the way it is. And I think Dan Snyder is, I don't want to say he's ignorant, but he's arrogant. He can make a lot of money if he changes that name, sells off all the old gear and sells up the new gear, make a ton of money, and fans would have a new team name to cheer for. I think it's pretty simple. And so, Arthur, we're going to try our best to refer to them as Washington. We might slip up a couple times. It happens. It's a podcast. But that's kind of my view on the situation.
Yeah, good for you, Kevin. We are absolutely in total agreement on this one, and I will certainly call Daniel Snyder ignorant. I think we've got about 30 other instances, at least, where we can point to of him fitting that category. But I thought you hit the nail on the head. Obviously, if it offends anyone, it's such an easy switch. And beyond that, the ultimate irony for these guys who are the best businessmen in the world to apparently miss this rebranding opportunity, or be so stubborn that they're not willing to embrace it, to me, like I said, is ironic, and it's foolish.
And my number one thing I will say to somebody who, I've had people argue with this with me before, and I try not to get in discussions about it because it's not like that I'm obsessed with the topic. It just, when it comes up, it's going to be a topic that is a word that offends people. And if you want to go ahead and if you don't think it's offensive, then I dare you, I challenge you to talk to a Native American and use that name, use that word casually and see how they respond. And I don't think anybody would ever want to do that because it's offensive. Again, we'll do our best. It's Bears versus Washington. And speaking of Bears versus Washington, I went behind enemy lines with Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan to break this one down for you. All right, joined right now by Brian McNally to preview this Sunday game between Bears and Washington. And Brian, last week as we were taping our podcast, we're thinking, all right, Bears are 5-6. They got an easy game with the 49ers at home. You look at Washington at home, prime time. They get the Cowboys. This is going to be a really fun game between two teams in the thick of it. Of course, Washington much more in the thick of it than the Bears are. So I'll start with that Monday night game. At the risk of being vague, I have to ask, what happened in the end of that game?
Things got crazy between those two teams. They tend to do that anyway. It's a rivalry game. But as you guys saw, if you were watching, it was pretty much a snooze fest for 3.5 quarters, just nothing much going on, 9-9 game. And then all hell broke loose late there. Just one of those situations where DeSean Jackson was trying to make a play on a punt and lost the, tried to hit a home run, and in doing so lost about 15 yards and then the football, and gave Dallas a chance to take the lead. The Redskins came right back, tied it, looked like redemption for DeSean Jackson on a touchdown reception from Kirk Cousins. And then a bad, kind of one of those classic things where you're celebrating getting back and maybe getting to overtime and you forget to take care of business on special teams, and a big Dallas kick return set up the long game winner from Dan Bailey. So frustrating night for Washington. That was a game it felt, I think, that players felt that they should have won. Dallas is still, I think, a dangerous team. I think better than even without Tony Romo. They're clearly not going to make a playoff push, I don't think. But the NFC East is so bad right now, guys, that, even without Tony Romo, they're one game out of the three teams ahead of them. So who knows at this point with that division. But it was an opportunity at home for the Redskins to take care of business, and Washington just didn't do it.
Yeah, and of course the Bears know that full well. Actually, I watched most of the game last night for obvious reasons because, just kind of getting ready for this week and knowing what the Bears are going to be going up against. My roommate got back with about 2 minutes to go. So to him, this was a fantastic game because that was the only part of the right. entire game he saw. Kirk Cousins, I've been fascinated by this guy's home and road splits. I'm sure you guys have, written about it, covered it. They're amazing how different his passer rating is. I mean, obviously the whole team has struggled on the road, but he specifically has had these issues. Is there something to them? Is there a trend that you've seen that that he's just not playing well on the road, or is it more that the whole team is struggling? You know, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, because I'm kind of curious how that's going to play itself out when he comes to Soldier Field.
Yeah, I think we have to keep in mind the Redskins' road schedule. I'm not sure a team in the league has played a road schedule the way the Redskins have. At New England, at Carolina, at the Jets, at the Falcons, at the Giants. Every one of these teams, you know, the Giants you can quibble with, but it, you know, the Giants are probably three or four plays away from being an 8-win team. So I don't think you can look at that as an easy game either. That's the Redskins' road schedule. So five games, and you know, obviously the Panthers and Patriots are, you know, a combined what 22-1 at this point, or 22-2. So that I think plays into it more than anything. It's not to say that Kirk Cousins away from FedEx Field is you know, doesn't have his issues. I'm not trying to absolve him of those, but I do think in a small five game sample size, you have to look at who they've played. And the Redskins just aren't as good as most of those teams. They're probably equal to the Giants. They're probably close to Atlanta. But for the most part, those other games, they were outclassed. The Jets game was close at halftime, and New York busted it open in the third quarter. So for the most part, those three games weren't competitive. And so, you know, by default, Kirk Cousins didn't look particularly good in any of those games. And he obviously at home at FedEx Field has had the chance maybe to feast on some easier teams. The home schedule's been, you know, featured New Orleans and Tampa and some easier games that are winnable for the way this roster is constructed right now. So, the splits are definitely there. I tend to look at the schedule more than anything as to why they're so extreme though.
Bears fans looking for info on this week's opponent, be sure to follow Brian on Twitter this week at B. McNally, B-M-C-N-A-L-L-Y, 1414, of course. And speaking of Cousins, where is the fan base there in the area? I mean, talk about a swing of emotions from where they were at 3 years ago with RG3 to everything that happened the past couple of years, and then you get the, you know, Jake Gruden in there. Where are they at with Cousins? Have they fully embraced Kirk Cousins as their guy? Have they just kind of forgotten about RG3? Where's that at this point?
I think there's always Robert Griffin III fans here. He meant too much to the city for an entire year there. You got to kind of look at the history of DC sports. There are not many dynamic athletes that have taken over the way Robert did in his rookie year. I mean, maybe you go Alex Ovechkin with the Caps, but hockey is obviously a much smaller stage than the NFL. Bryce Harper broke out, had an MVP season this year, but that, you know, that doesn't have the baseball history, and players don't matter the way the quarterback of the Redskins does. So to have, and certainly the Wizards have never, you know, it's been a long, long time since they've had an iconic player to kind of focus around. You know, Robert Griffin as a rookie was an iconic player. He had incredible plays. He led them on a 7-game win streak. They went to the playoffs. I mean, that meant something to people. And so even after a couple of years of struggles, even when it was clear that his transition to being a legitimate NFL quarterback wasn't really going to happen, you know, he still has his backers. And Kirk Cousins, I think, kind of fought that a little bit. But there are people skeptical of him. You know, why don't you see what you have with Robert and not, you know, waste time on Kirk? We know what he is. And he had to fight that. He had to fight that we know what he is label. You know, a turnover machine, a guy who could make plays downfield but isn't particularly great at any one thing. He's kind of turned that on his head a little bit this year. They asked him to be more consistent. He's been more consistent. They asked him to limit those turnovers. He's, at least in recent weeks, managed to limit those turnovers. Hasn't been sacked a ton, gets rid of the ball on time. And, you know, he's been a different player here the last couple of weeks. Not that he was great last night. Could have had a better game, but for the most part, he's been better, to the point where people are talking contract extension and things like that. And that was something in August that I wouldn't say it was unthinkable, but it just seemed unlikely that would be the scenario, that he would play 12 games, start them all, and get people at least talking about his future here instead of him playing out the string and going somewhere else.
One more question about this offense, the run game. And when I'm watching the game last night, I don't know if it's because I was letting John Gruden get to me in a positive way, because I'm thinking, wow, it looks good when they run the ball with these, you know, guys up front, a couple first-rounders up there moving, the power run game with Matt Jones and Alfred Morris, if they would use him as well. But then you look at the numbers, and it hasn't been very good this year. I know Jones has shown some flashes, but what's been your take on the way they've been running the ball with those two, and do you expect them to kind of be one of those teams that they want to start the game running to make things easier for Cousins?
They try to, but it just hasn't worked very often, Kevin, honestly. I mean, Washington's a team that wants to get Alfred Morris going. He's been their guy the last couple years. They almost take pains. Jay Gruden almost goes out of his way to say, this is our guy, he's our number one guy, but we're going to feature both. But from game to game, you never really know what you're going to get with those two. You know, Alfred's battling some rib injuries the last couple weeks. Last night, I think he had six carries. They went with Matt Jones. Jay Gruden explained on a conference call on Tuesday that it's kind of a feel thing. They go into a game, see what Alfred has. If it doesn't look like he's dynamic or getting the yards after carry he needs, the yards after contact that he needs, that they're going to go with Matt Jones. And Jones is that physical power back, much better in space, much better in the screen game. He's taken a couple screens, at least 50 yards this year. That can be a weapon for them. But consistently wise, I mean, they just haven't been able to get that group going, whether it's the injuries on the offensive line. Certainly they've been hit hard there. They've been playing pretty much with a couple of backups in the starting lineup since week three. That all that stuff contributes to it. But for whatever reason, they just can't get that group going. I think they've only had 200 yards rushing against the Saints, who are obviously historically bad. Other than that, it's been really since the second week of the season since we've seen a really, really productive run, ground game from Washington. So it's something they want to fix. I'm just not sure they're capable of doing that this season.
On the defensive side of the ball, another guy that Gruden was falling in love with last night was Breland at cornerback. Although I guess I shouldn't preface it with Gruden was falling in love with him, because that's not a very high bar, of course, when watching a Monday Night Football game.
Sure.
But you look at his numbers. I've watched a couple of games this year. It seems like he's having a bit of a breakout year. What kind of stands out about his skill set? And is he the type of guy that will kind of follow like an Alshon Jeffrey around on Sunday?
I think he will be. You got to remember, too, Washington's secondary has been completely ripped apart by injury. Chris Culliver was the guy they brought in from San Francisco in the offseason as a free agent. He was kind of going to be their number one guy, and tore his ACL. He struggled all year with a knee injury and had a suspension for a game from an off-field incident, and then tore up his knee Thanksgiving Day in practice. So he's gone for the year. D'Angelo Hall is going to be the other starting corner. He's got a plantar plate tear in his right foot and his toe, so he's limited, and they basically moved him. He missed a bunch of games, and they moved him to safety when he came back. The other guy was David Amerson, who was a second-round pick, believe it or not, a couple years ago, and just couldn't play. He just could not play this year, made one mistake after another. They just straight-up cut him, which you rarely see, obviously, teams cutting a second-round pick 3 years in. So Breland is kind of the guy. He is, the lone guy left standing. They've got some good play in recent weeks from Will Blackman, who is, was cut by Seattle in training camp, but a longtime NFL veteran, and it's actually played really well. And it's almost amazing to me the secondary has held up as well as it has, given those injuries, given the fact that they're starting Blackman, who is a guy off the street. Quentin Dunbar was literally a 10th, 11th string wide receiver in training camp who, because of injuries early in camp, they just said, we need bodies. They switched him over to corner, and he took to it. He made the team on the practice. He made the practice squad and had a great game against the Giants last week. So, and is contributing. So they've managed to patch the secondary together, and I think Breland is a huge part of that. He's a physical guy. He's not afraid. He has short-term memory, so he'll follow guys around. He battled Dez Bryant even as a rookie last year on a Monday night game in Dallas. back and forth the entire game. Had a great game against Dez. Did well against him, I thought, for the most part last night. Bryant had a big catch late on Will Blackman that I'm not sure anyone could have stopped. It was a perfect throw and a perfect catch. But Breland, for the most part, has become, by default, the Reds, you know, their go-to guy at corner. But he's certainly not maybe a household name to a lot of people. But he's a guy they like a lot and think can develop into a high-end corner. It's only his second year, so he's still a work in progress. But for now, at least, he's their go-to guy at cornerback.
Couple more here with Brian McNally, covers Washington out there for 106.7 The Fan. On this defense, you mentioned all these kind of no-name guys in the secondary. Who in the front seven? I think most people in Chicago should know at least who Ryan Kerrigan is, especially from his Big Ten days. Other guys up there, Baker, Knighton, who are some of the key guys, especially when it comes to this matchup, when you talk about whether it's rushing Jay Cutler or slowing down Matt Forte, who are some of the key guys to keep an eye on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that. I mean, if you're going to run up the middle on the Redskins, you may run into trouble. I mean, they're not a great run defense. They were early in the year. It kind of fell apart on them. Terrence Knighton is a massive human being. So that's a guy at nose tackle that you're really going to have trouble if you're trying to attack him. You know, he can command double teams. He can free up other guys to make plays. Chris Baker, not necessarily a huge sack guy, but again, it's someone who can play either nose or defensive end, and it has developed from a practice squad guy out of Hampton University into a very productive player. There have been times where when Kerrigan was still kind of shaking off the rust from the knee injury early in the knee surgery he had in the offseason, Chris Baker was their most disruptive defensive end, or front seven guy. He was the guy making plays. He was the guy getting tackles for losses and things like that. So definitely a guy the Bears need to look out for. I think the Redskins' strength is they don't necessarily have a star up front. Kerrigan is the closest thing they have to it. But because of that offseason knee surgery, just hasn't necessarily produced at the level that they expected, maybe. He's starting to play a little bit better, starting to rack up some numbers now. But for the most part, they have a good, solid rotation of guys that can come in. One of them, actually, the Bears fans will be familiar with, is Steven Paya.
Yep.
He actually suffered a toe injury yesterday, so he's extremely doubtful. In fact, I'm pretty sure he won't play against the Bears next week, which is a loss because that group has stayed pretty healthy. And they've had a good rotation of guys. Ricky Jean-Francois, a guy they brought in from the Colts, he's been pretty productive. Baker, as we said, Knighton, Jason Hatcher, the former Cowboy, is another guy who's a longtime NFL veteran and a solid defensive end who's been kind of battling knee injuries for a couple of years now. But they tend to rest him during the week, and he's been reasonably productive here the last couple of weeks as well. So it's a decent group up front, and they have good depth. But the injuries have kind of hit the linebacking core a little bit, and that's certainly contributed, I think, to some of their issues stopping the run.
Yeah, Bears fans probably, I don't know if they miss Steven Paya. I know reporters miss him a little bit. These are things fans don't care about, but Steven Paya was always a great guy to talk to in the locker room the past couple of years when the Bears were pretty terrible. Also, former Bear Tress Way has been a pretty good punter out there in Washington. Oh. Talk about another great interview. I mean, I love talking to Tress Way.
Tress Way is fantastic. I really don't know what the Bears were doing there because I don't know their punter situation at the time. Maybe they had somebody who was just that much better.
They actually drafted a punter. So, but it actually ended up being a pretty interesting competition because normally, obviously, the guy who gets drafted is going to win it. But Tress Way, he made it a pretty good battle.
I mean, he and when they cut him, the Redskins immediately signed him and said, "Oh, I mean, they just cut their punter who they also drafted one last year." They just cut their punter and said, you know what, we're going to go with this guy. And I think he got one preseason game in last year and had a really, really good season. It's kind of been hit or miss this year a little bit more, but lately has done better, looked closer to the form he had last season. And like you said, a real interesting guy. A lot of fun to talk to, really engaging. So a guy that's, I guess, an asset to any locker room.
Yeah. I know we're taping this on Tuesday and you're still fresh off the Cowboys, so I'm not going to ask you for a pick necessarily, unless you have one, but is there a way you see this game going on Sunday?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the Bears, in a lot of ways, not that the teams themselves are similar, but they seem to have been put into similar situations, right? That the Bears kind of blew everything up at the end of last season. It was a nightmare year for them. No one really predicted that they would, you know, I think probably people would have expected them to be closer to having the number one pick in the draft at home next spring than competing for a playoff spot. And then you see them go into Lambeau and win, and you think, wow, maybe this team's just a lot better than I think. And then they lose to the 49ers at home. I mean, it's hard to parse that. The Redskins are similarly maddening, I think. I think Bears fans would be able to relate with how Washington fans look at their team because, you know, some weeks, you know, they blow out the Saints. They look really good. They're competitive with the Falcons. They lose in overtime. And then other weeks, you know, you drop a home game to the Cowboys when you put, you know, essentially put yourself in complete control of the NFC East. So it's hard to know which Redskin team will come show up week to week. It's been over a year since they've had consecutive wins.
Wow.
Under Jay Gruden, they've won two games in a row one time. Last October, they beat the Titans at home and then beat Dallas on the road. That's it. Otherwise, it's a roller coaster, up and down. You know, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. Not that they've even been close to 500. It's probably win one, lose two. But just haven't been able to put together that string necessary to consider themselves legitimate playoff contenders. And the only reason we do now is because the division, the Giants, didn't take care of business when they had the chance. And the Eagles obviously have sputtered, and the Cowboys have been beset by, you know, probably bad luck and maybe some mismanagement. And so you combine those factors and you have a 5-7 Redskins team that still has a ton to play for. If you look at the tiebreakers and that kind of thing, they're still kind of in control. If they win out, they're going to the playoffs. So that's how they're going to approach this game. The other issue, though, is they've won one road game in Jay Gruden's tenure, 2 years now, one road win, that win at Dallas last year. You know, we talked about their road schedule, but it's hard for me to pick the Redskins when they haven't been able to go away from FedEx Field and show the kind of performance they need to win a game against a team that's won five games and is you know, having a bounce back season itself.
Yeah, well, the Bears have only won one game in John Fox's era at Soldier Field. It's a little shorter than Jay Gruden, but something's got to give. And, Brian, thanks again for joining us, and make sure you guys bring it to the John Fox conference call because your copycats in Chicago, we've done a pretty good job this season, and we're going to come full force for Jay Gruden on Wednesday.
Do it. This should be good. My buddy Rich Campbell has started something over there. I like it.
He has, and everyone's really into it, especially the Jim Chomsula. He won us over last week, so we'll see how Jay responds.
I always enjoy which coaches actually like the bit and which coaches just could care less and want you to just start asking questions and quiet down. So we'll see. We did it to Fox in Denver a couple of years ago. We'll see if he remembers us next year or later this week when we talk to him.
All right, Brian, should be an interesting game on Sunday. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you out there at Soldier Field.
Looking forward to it, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Special thanks again to Brian McNally, 106.7 The Fan. Follow him on Twitter, at bmcnally14. Arthur, can I tell you a Tress Way story?
Yes, please.
So last summer, Tress Way was technically in a punting competition with Pat O'Donnell, and the day... it was a Sunday, the most fans at Bourbonnais, so this is summer of 2014, and it was the day that Megapunt was born, a.k.a. everyone chanted Megapunt every time O'Donnell booted it. And Tress Way actually had a pretty decent day punting, too. So after practice, obviously everyone went and talked to O'Donnell, and everyone's calling him Megapunt, he's the draft pick. But I wanted to talk to Tress Way, and he loved it. He said, man, and he knew everyone was cheering for O'Donnell. But he had a pretty good taste. He loved the competition. He said he loved the fans getting into it. And I always remember that. I appreciated that he enjoyed what was going on, and good for him for making a little career out of it in Washington in the past two seasons.
Good stuff. I think that's sort of telling that a year later we look back on that final Tressman Bourbonnais, and that was one of the most exhilarating days from those couple weeks in Bourbonnais. It says a lot, doesn't it?
The most exhilarating day, if you ask me.
well, there was the Martellus Bennett body slam.
Oh, boring. Boring. I like punting competitions. That's what I want. All right, Arthur, let's race through these matchups. Bears run game, Washington run defense. Bears run game got going. Washington did a pretty good job the last 2 weeks, but they had gone 6 weeks in a row giving up at least 142 yards on the ground. I gave the edge to the Bears. What do you think?
Yeah, like the 49ers, Washington's run defense doesn't travel very well. The three-headed attack in Chicago got going here. I tend to agree it should be an edge for the Bears. One thing to keep an eye on, Kyle Long told us Monday that some of these two-gap, 3-4 defenses can give them trouble in terms of discipline and avoiding holding penalties. So we'll see if that's kind of rears its ugly head again Sunday.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing that Kyle said in response to my question about why the holding penalties, how do you fix that? And he said it was kind of a consequence. And he was right. I checked Jerome Boger's crew led the league in holding penalties, and they kind of knew that was going to come. Bears passing offense, Washington pass defense. I think this could be a great matchup between Breland and Jeffrey. Talked about it with Brian McNally. Washington's pass rush ebbs and flows, not great, and the Bears have done a really good job protecting Cutler. No Martellus Bennett. We'll get to that at the end of the show, but Cutler's going to need some help from some weapons. I still gave the Bears the edge here.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and I do like Bashaud Breland a lot. That should be a fun matchup. I'm glad that Brian said he's been as kind of perplexed by how Washington secondary has done it this year, because you just don't see the playmakers there, and yet they've kind of played over their heads. But nonetheless, I expect Alshon Jeffrey to bounce back. I certainly expect Jay Cutler to bounce back, and this should be a matchup the Bears can win.
All right, on the side of the ball, Washington running the ball with Alfred Morris and Matt Jones. Not really doing that well, as Brian talked about, both averaging 3.5, 3.4 a carry. But the way they run it, Arthur, the way they get things outside at the power run game compared to the way the Bears' defensive line has looked the past few weeks, I know they played well against Sean Drone. I did give this one to Washington, though, because I think this could be a little bit the way, like what Denver did to the Bears a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and you had a good nugget in your matchup story about how Washington gets it going on the sweep left or the left rush off end, and it's an area the Bears have struggled to, so certainly something to keep an eye on. I'm excited to see Matt Jones, the Washington third rounder, up close and personal. He's an explosive player, just hasn't been able to protect the football. But the Bears' run defense, despite the final numbers, obviously showed some improvement Sunday. We'll see if they can build on it. Until we see that, we'll give Washington the edge.
Thanks for reminding me, Arthur. You can find a much more detailed edge matchup breakdown and Arthur's scouting the Washington team breakdown in your Thursday edition of the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, lots of other papers across Illinois. We wrap up the Kirk Cousins passing attack versus Bears pass defense. Brian explained that there's a little more to the Cousins road record than just the numbers themselves. The Bears pass defense had one bad play. But my concern here is Jordan Reed and what Matt Jones can do in the flat, because that's what's been hurting them, as opposed to maybe DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon. I think I did give the Bears a slight edge here because they have been playing pretty well against the past few weeks. And I still don't trust Cousins on the road. What say you?
It's an astute point by you. Once again, the fact that San Francisco did most of its damage on those little dump offs into the flats. It's an area Shea McClellan has struggled to get to. Jonathan Anderson a little bit inexperienced. So, we'll give the Bears the edge here, but keep an eye on DeSean Jackson. Played pretty well Monday night in spite of the ridiculous mind numbing punt return. And Jordan Reed's a really good tight end when he's healthy. Keep an eye on Jameson Crowder. So there are some weapons here, but the Bears pass defense should be able to get it going.
So we give the Bears the ultimate edge in this one, and we'll get to our picks later in the show. But I think, despite what happened, I think a lot of people are jumping on the Bears bandwagon. A few former Bears, we talked about Tressway and Stephen Paya earlier in the show. Mason Foster, who was a linebacker with the Bears over the summer, is also on Washington. And their kick returner is Rashad Ross, Rocket Ross, who was with the Bears for like 2-3 weeks when they went through about 12 kickoff returners last season. So some familiar faces coming to Soldier Field on Sunday. All right, we're going to head to our phone lines right now, and we are going to bring in Mike Tenier, friend of the program, Bleacher Report's national NFL lead writer. Mike, how are you?
I survived that Monday night game, so I'm feeling wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, Mike, my first question for you, and by the way, folks, follow Mike Tenier on Twitter, at Mike Tenier, T-A-N-I-E-R. You will be pleased with your follow there. Are you in first place in the NFC East?
We are all in first place in the NFC East. There's a little bit of first place in the NFC East in all of us. And I think after I run to the laboratory, I'm going to flush some of it away.
Well, you know, that game, when we talked about it earlier in the show, was just something else. But Mike, you cover this whole league, and you know how this works. The games are so bad, and we are glued to them. I mean, you look back to the previous week when it was Matt Schaub versus Josh McCown and then Austin Davis, and it's a great finish, and we're all watching it. I mean, Roger Goodell, I mean, this thing is just a genius, a machine that they have, that the games are terrible, the quarterbacks are bad, these teams are mediocre, the coaches make dumb decisions, the officials are terrible, and what do? We watch them every single weekend.
And you know what? The NCAA is on to us because there are, what, 42 bowl games, and it'll be December 22nd or something like that, and we'll have a free minutes, and the Belk Bowl will be on, and we'll watch 2 6-5 teams slug it out, and not just for draft purposes, but just for entertainment. We will be riveted to it. But you know what? It's a little bit different because that Browns-Ravens game had a bunch of back and forth and a bunch of crazy storylines and things like that. What we saw last night was just punishingly bored. I don't mind seeing two teams go up and down the field, but if you're going to make me watch punts for a half, well, it's my job. But please, I wish you would do something else.
Hey, Mike, Arthur Arkus here. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
It's good to hear you, man.
Yeah, good to hear you too. Let me ask, sticking with the NFC East and the brutalness of watching it each week, have we reached the point where we have to wonder if maybe the NFC East is as bad as the AFC South?
Oh, it's worse than the AFC South. I'll tell you that right now. I believe that either the Colts or the Texans would be in first place going away in this division, and especially if you put Andrew Luck back on the Colts and get their ship a little redder. They will just blow the doors off of anybody here. And if you put the Jaguars in this division, it would fit right in. And if you put the Titans in here, I think that they're better than the Dallas Cowboys right now as configured. So that's as bad as it is. And I try to make sense out of it. And the Cowboys are just a bad team, and the Redskins are just a mediocre team, and the Giants are just an injury mess. And then you look at the Eagles, and what you have there is a high volatility powder keg of a team, kind of like what the Colts are. And they're the ones that, you know, any kind of like semblance of like law and order and sensibility, they'd be at 7-5, but they're not because of this whole Chip Kelly soap opera weirdo system that's put in place. They're 5-7, and you know, while they're going to blow up one or two more times and maybe get to 7-9, I hope that doesn't mean that makes them the division champion.
Mike, I tend to do this with almost every national writer we have on our show, and sometimes I worry that it's getting repetitive, but it's our podcast, so I don't care. So I'm going to ask you, what is a catch?
You know what? It's pornography. I know it when I see it. But you know, at least I got to talk to some of the people who were involved. But you know, I got to talk to Mike Pereira a couple weeks ago, which is fascinating, and that's going to come up on Bleacher Report, a big feature on him. I got to talk to some of the league officials that were making the rounds in preseason, and after going around and around with a bunch of beat writers on the sidelines, he kind of says something to the effect that when in doubt now, it's not a catch. When in doubt, it's not a catch. So I was watching the fourth quarter of that game last night, and Dez Bryant did something along the sidelines, and I looked at it, and it's like his elbow got out of bounds, and I said, not a catch. And I was right. Now, if the whole league stuck with that when in doubt, leave it out rule and didn't throw that Golden Tate craziness in from time to time, then I think we'd be more comfortable with it. Yes, there are people on Twitter who have this personal need to say, well, I consider that a catch, and I don't care what anyone else says. But if everything that's bobbled, everything that's like sort of out of bounds, not out of bounds, you know, 1 foot, not control, all those things, if all those things are non-catches, then at least we have something we can hang our hat on when that ref goes to the replay booth.
And Mike, I feel like we're making things more difficult for these officials too, because not just you know the instant replay but the rules. I mean, everything's just so confusing, and we harp on these guys every Monday and Tuesday, but that's a really tough job the way we make it for these guys. And you know, they don't have the benefit of this frame by frame stuff for you know that face mask penalty on Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it can't be easy anymore.
It's ridiculous, and that frame-by-frame stuff on Thursday night, That was a fine call. There was nothing wrong with that call on Thursday night. He did grab face mask. The whole helmet did twist. And you go frame by frame like it's the Zapruder footage. You find a guy with an umbrella on the grassy knoll. That's not reflective of the reality. And all the people who were screaming and hollering and making a storyline about it on Friday morning are the same people who will jump up and down and say, we have to protect players from head injuries. We have to protect players from head injuries. So what you need at some point is a prioritization and some common sense rules of thumb. That's why I like the idea of, you know, when in doubt, it's not a catch. There you have a rule of thumb that can supersede everything else. If the rule of thumb on something like any kind of contact was when in doubt, throw the flag if you see the helmet bouncing around, then you're going to get it right 95% of the time, and we won't have some of the intrigue that we have. Of course, part of it now is we're always going to have controversy because the people who like the controversy are the ones who are going to be spending the most time tweeting and generating it. If you looked at it and said, nice call, that was interesting, and logged off, you weren't talking about it all day Friday with us.
Mike, I'm going to switch gears a little bit from the woeful officiating and interpretation of the rules to the hometown team here, the Chicago Bears. What do you make of the first season under John Fox, and what do you think the chances are that this staff is able to stay together beyond this season with what looks like a lot of jobs opening up here this offseason?
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of jobs, and your offensive coordinator will probably get some looks for his pedigree right now. It's been a twist and turn season because I remember in September it looked like they were going to kind of quit early. And they were benching guys, and they traded guys, you know, and they traded Allen and did some other things. Like, oh, they're going to go into full rebuilding mode. That's cool. And the team responded to that early on, and some of the veterans stepped up. I remember seeing, you know, Willie Young and Lamar Houston, who were practically inactive, coming around having some pretty good games. And, you know, Cutler started to look a little more sharp. Like, oh, they're going to make a little playoff run. I hope that they don't do that and it doesn't wind up counterproductive on them. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a second. And now, you know, after this loss, that was an ugly loss and kind of a gut-wrenching loss at the end. You see Martellus Bennett going on the injured reserve, and I was like, oh, they're going back to get the veterans and push them aside a little bit, rebuilding mode. You know, and rebuilding mode can be healthy because you're playing the Washington Redskins this week, and we saw them on Monday night. If you're out there and you are on merit a 7-9 team right now, your best bet is to get on with the development of new players and looking at the roster and seeing what you have. If you're an on merit 7-9 team and you're pushing and shoving your way to the playoffs, you can backtrack. You can make bad decisions about players. You can stick guys on the bench who could use three or four games of evaluation. I think the Bears are going to go in the direction of evaluation now. It'll probably be better for them in the long run. And you know, that'll put them in a healthier position at the beginning of next year than, say, some NFC East team that's like kicking and crawling to get to 8-8.
I want to ask you about the opponent this week, Mike. It's the Washington Pro Football Team, and you can say whatever you want because you're the guest. I went on a little – I got on my high horse earlier in the show, went on a little rant. Do you think Dan Snyder or Roger Goodell, do you think this name's going to get changed? And if so, what would have to happen?
Yeah, I think we got five or six years left. They got to look at the bottom line, and they got to look at the sea change. And one of the things about the NFL, and I think you can throw Dan Snyder into this as well, and it's something I've learned over the years, incredibly insular thinking. You know, Roger Goodell does not sit and listen to voices different from his own, ever, unless there's some kind of special like summit that he has to go to. Dan Snyder's in the same situation. Hey, you know, forget about talking to somebody about Native American rights. He doesn't have to talk to anybody with a hipster beard if he doesn't want to. So, you know, he can be surrounded by all these yes men and things like that. So there's a huge amount of don't get it involved in that. And it should, I really don't think it should be political pressure. I think it should be social pressure. It should be marketing pressure. It should be bottom line pressure. And I think these things are going to come to roost over the next 4, 5, 6 years. But if you're waiting for somebody, you'd have a dream and you come to them like, my God, the name of our team is racist right now. I don't think it's going to come to them that way. It's got to come through some force that, like, as now is like unforeseen, that kind of pierces the armor of their world and their lives a little bit.
Mike, what about Washington on the field? Is Kirk Cousins a guy that they may choose to build around after this season? What have you seen from him?
You know, I was kind of impressed with him last night. He looked stronger in the last couple games I've seen in a while. I still don't see a high upside there. And even in last night's game, of course, we're talking about a game where they scored 9 points for three quarters. You know, there's tons of short, shallow crossing routes, you know, these passes that every quarterback should be able to complete. And they're still going wide and high off of Jordan Reed. And, you know, he'll throw this ugly pass on second and four and then throw a good one on third and four. And you're like, wow, what a great play. So It would be a mistake, I think, to really build around Kirk Cousins. I think you're going to get a limited upside there. If you do it, then you have to plan to be building a defense and weapons and doing all those other things and say we're going to be like this defense first, pound the running game team, because you're never going to make Kirk Cousins into one of those top 10, top 15 quarterbacks. No matter how many times Mike Shanahan says he saw an elite quarterback, whoever's was saying they saw an elite quarterback, I don't think he's that guy. I have been surprised with how competent he's been that we're not getting these three interception games every 2 weeks anymore.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And what about the quarterback on the other side of things, who in a lot of ways is kind of the opposite of Cousins with all the talent in the world? The Bears will face a decision on Jay Cutler, though, even as well as I think he's played. What do you think about his season and what the Bears do with him moving forward?
I think he's played very, very well. I think it's interesting that some of the best games came when there was sort of nothing to be gained or lost from the games. Right. When you thought you were in rebuilding mode, he kind of turned it on, and then you had kind of a weak performance on Sunday. I think they should move on from him, and I think the salary cap situation gets reasonable for that fairly soon, maybe in this offseason. I think that's the best decision. I think they're a team that knows they need to rebuild. I think they can find a quarterback of the future. I think it's a pretty good quarterback draft, and I think you have to do that. You're in a different set of the age spectrum. You have a different set of the evaluation spectrum with Jay Cutler, and I think he has peaked as a player, and you're kind of – if this is what you're seeing as like the best Jay Cutler right now, then you might not want to see the Jay Cutler you're going to see in about 2 years if you continue paying.
Mike Tenier, our guest, Bleacher Report's NFL National Lead Writer. Mike, I will leave you with this. We'll wrap things up. Do you have an updated Super Bowl prediction for us? And with that, do you think Coldplay will dominate the halftime performance?
Coldplay is elite. Actually, I despise Coldplay. It's the most boring, middle-of-the-road music in the world. I'd rather hear up with people out there. It just evaporates from your brain the moment it goes in there. It's kind of like watching the Cowboys offense. It evaporates from your brain and just disappears after the series. But I'm just going to go predictable. I'm going to go simple. I'm going to go Panthers against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I think it's hard to pick against the Panthers right now. And I see what's going on. And I know the whole Patriots are doomed storyline right now. I think they're going to hit the playoffs with Rob Gronkowski back, Amendola back at full speed. They're going to figure out what they're doing with some of these guys like Amendola, with White and some of these other guys. And they're going to be the team that just going to go out there and scares the heck out of everybody in the playoffs.
All right, folks, go follow Mike Tenier on Twitter, at Mike Tenier, T-A-N-I-E-R. Mike, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl.
Can't wait to see you guys in Mobile at Saucy Q and the Brick Pit. Oh, and watch some football games, too. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys.
All right, thanks, Mike. Again, Mike Tenier, thanks, Mike. Bleacher Report, NFL National Lead Writer, does some great stuff, and I've been going to the Senior Bowl for... It'll be my fifth time down there, and I met him my first year. Great guy, and they do have some pretty good barbecue food down there. And a fan of barbecue food, I believe, is our closer here, Hub Arkish, in the building, ready to go. And Hub, two big stories today as we taped Tuesday. I should say one big story is Martellus Bennett. And actually, Arthur and I haven't talked about it yet at all in the first 47 minutes of the podcast. So you're here now. You want to talk about Martellus Bennett?
Well, first of all, who's not a fan of barbecue?
I know. I figured.
I know a lot of people are not fans of Coldplay. That one caught me off guard.
Yeah. But,
we'll see. We'll see as we build to that. That'll be interesting. Terribly disappointing news to me because I happen to like Marty a lot personally. I find him enjoyable. I think he's a really good football player. I think he's his own worst enemy. And the reason I say really disappointing, not just that he is injured and won't play the rest of the season, my guess would mean that he's played his last down as a Chicago Bear. You got a situation where we knew that he had these nagging injuries. He missed the Packers game. He got banged up on the ball he fumbled on one of his three catches, on Sunday, but came back in the game and finished the game. Now, I know you told me, Kevin, that you were told that there were going to be x-rays after the game. We have to assume that something significant was found in those x-rays. But at the end of the day, we also know that he's been playing through this for at least 3 or 4 weeks now, and there was no move to the injured reserve list. There was a return after missing the Packer game. We were told had the Packer game been Sunday and not Thursday, he probably wouldn't have missed this. We also have heard reports that there's been some off-the-field stuff, some stuff in the locker room. We know Marty. We know he often engages mouth without engaging brain. And it sounds to me like John Fox and Ryan Pace finally said enough is enough. And I'm not doubting that he's injured, but I just suspect that if they felt he was part of the future, they might have at least waited a week or two and tried to see if he could get healthy before sending him to injured reserve.
And Arthur, you know, Martellus Bennett, when he was in every game aside from the Packers game, which he missed, he played in 94.5% of the snaps. I mean, the guy was always in the field. I think it was 2013 he said he played through a torn MCL. I mean, we know how tough he is. Now going forward, you got Zach Miller. I know everyone loves Zach Miller, but, you know, are you going to move forward with him as your number one tight end? They bring in Rob Houser. They have Kari Lee. Suddenly, if Martellus isn't back next year, and I think you're kind of in the same boat, you don't think he will be, tight end becomes a big need for the Bears this offseason.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm amongst the guys who really like Zach Miller, both as a person and as a player. But there's a reason that he was out of the NFL for a couple years, and you know why he's kind of come out of nowhere, come out of left field to do what he's done this year. He's not overly dependable. So while I would think that the Bears will give him an opportunity to return on sort of a team-friendly deal with not a lot of risk, this has absolutely become a huge need, and it's somewhat unfortunate only because you spent your biggest draft investment on Kevin White last year, and with so many needs on defense, now all of a sudden, here you are looking at another suddenly glaring one on offense, and it'll be interesting to see how Ryan Pace attacks that, presuming that Martellus Bennett won't be back, which is what I'm doing.
Yeah, so Bennett on injury reserve will miss the last four games, and Zach Miller, Kari Lee, Rob Houser will fit the bill. Let's start to wrap things up and go to our players to watch and game picks. By the way, Hub, earlier in the show, I went on a little two-minute Washington team name rant, so I figured that was probably one is enough for our listeners. But they should read your column in the Thursday Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, lots of other newspapers around Illinois to get your take on the issue.
Did you agree with me?
Oh, of course.
I'm just making sure.
Agree with you, I would have had you in here. We'd have had a little first take, kind of hot take back and forth.
Yeah, just for our listeners, that's not part of the job. I just was curious if you agreed with me.
No, okay. I do, 100%. So why don't I start with you then, Hub? Who's the kind of a guy you're going to be keeping an eye on Sunday?
Boy, great question. I really hadn't thought much about it yet. I've made my prediction. I know we'll get to that in a few minutes. Hronis Grasu had an absolutely awful game on Sunday. He got beat like a drum by Ian Williams. He looks to be overmatched physically. He's got to have a bounce-back performance to convince me that he should be playing that position the rest of the season. I still like him. I just think he needs an offseason in the weight room to get an NFL body. So he is one player I will watch closely. Kadeem Carey became a curiosity to me on Sunday because I'm not a Carey fan. I think that's well documented, mainly because while he does run hard, he's a liability in pass protection. He's not a good pass catcher, and he hadn't played special teams, but he was forced onto the special teams on Sunday and actually threw the key block that sprung Deontay Thompson on the big 74-yard kickoff return. He also got a costly holding penalty trying to pass protect. So he still continues to be a mystery to me, and yet when the game was on the line with good performances, very good performances from Matt Forte and Jeremy Langford, it was Carey who they decided to give the ball to for that last touchdown. So I think those two guys probably. And then, you know, guys, I'm at the end of my rope with both Christian Jones and Shea McClellan, and they're guys I focus on every week to see if they're finally going to make some plays. I was really disappointed in Christian Jones Sunday. He just disappeared. He disappeared practically from the stat sheet, from the game film, and he better do something this week and in the next few weeks if he wants to be considered part of the future.
Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't really notice Christian Jones at all, and you know, Arthur and I talked earlier in the show about the way Washington's going to use the running backs in the flat and Jordan Reed, and that is not, I mean, Shea McClellan, Vance McDonald just schooled him on a very pretty basic slant route, so that's going to be something to monitor. Arthur, who are you watching on Sunday?
Yeah, Hub went with the third rounder from Ryan Pace's first draft class in Hronis Grasu. I'm going to go with the fifth rounder, Adrian Amos. I thought he played his worst game as a Bear. Obviously was noticeable for the wrong reasons on the two biggest plays of the game for 49ers. Washington may not scare you, you know, when you look at the stats in terms of their ability to throw the deep ball and produce explosive plays through the air, but the safety play better be up to task when you're talking about DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed. And John Fox talks all the time about the confidence of his young players, so I will be watching to see if there's any noticeable shake in confidence from Adrian Amos coming off a tough game.
Yeah, and along those lines, I mean, I'm this is not my guy, but I want to see how Jay Cutler responds to what was his worst game of the season, too. But the one player looking at the defensive side of the ball, I want to see Pernell McPhee make some plays, because that's somebody who, he's making an impact. You know, they move him inside on the nickel, and he attracts double teams. He's playing hard. The team, you know, the guys in that locker room love him, but he's still limited by that knee injury. He's somebody who's playing like 80% of the snaps, and I want to see him make some impact plays.
I realize we don't debate these, but I would just add on that. I don't agree that he is still making an impact, but I've been giving him the benefit of the doubt because of the knee. We saw what we wanted to see early in the season from him. We know the knee has been a problem, but you cannot ignore the fact with Pernell McPhee that in 4 years in Baltimore, six starts, only because Terrell Suggs had a season-ending injury and had significant knee and thigh problems his first 2 years there. This is becoming a history now. And so, you know, the guy who you felt good about giving $40 million bucks to the first half of the season, I'm really starting to have my doubts about now.
Yeah. And that's why I want to, you know, see some flashes when they start Sunday. Cause you know, look, if he makes, you know, the splash plays we saw, I mean, I think the Bears can maybe even run away with it if he gets after Washington.
One other guy, and well, two other guys, actually. One Washington. You got to watch DeSean Jackson just because he's on the field. Something's going to happen there. Guys, I thought that probably the best Bear on the field Sunday was Willie Young. He now has 3.5 sacks and a pick in the Bears' last four games. A lot of it comes with a hand on the ground in sub packages, but he is playing more outside linebacker. I'm not so sure that he isn't playing his way into the Bears' future plans. I think he's learning to play that position and getting healthier each week.
But he still wants to be called a defensive end.
He can call him whatever he wants as long as he gets the quarterback.
All right, let's go to our game picks. And I'm going to start with Dan Mott. Our executive producer last week was the only one who picked against the Bears. Now, granted, it was for purely selfish reverse psychology and, you know,
he screwed that up too.
Yeah, he did. But he picked the 49ers because he said whenever he picks the Bears. So, Dan, I'll start with you. Bears, Washington. Who you got?
Oh, guys. I'm going – this week I'm going Washington 17, Bears 14.
For the same reason? Are you doing reverse psychology
you know what?
Again?
No, I looked and the Bears are negative three right now. I mean, that could probably change later on in the week. But I think that they wind up losing this one again. And not for the selfish reasons that I did last week. It's just I just have a feeling.
All right, Dan keeps them at one win at home. Nick, the intern, is up next. Nick, I know you don't like giving scores out, but who you got?
I'm picking the Bears straight up because I'm a Giants fan and I need Washington to lose bad.
All right.
So Bears over Washington.
I'm fine with the selfish reasons. I like it. Hub?
I watch the Monday night game. Oh. Maybe the only one in America, but it's my job. Washington is 0-5 on the road, and they're a bad football team. The Bears are not a great football team, but they're better than they played Sunday. They had shown up stuff, and I think that the message is going to get through this week. It's time to win one at home. You got to find a way to do it. I don't think it'll be easy. I think both of these defenses are fallible. I look for a lot of points, and I'm picking the Bears 30-29.
All right, Arthur.
Yeah, I singled out last week Jay Cutler and Alshon Jeffrey for their struggles. I feel this week they absolutely turn it around. You mentioned Cutler tends to bounce back this season off tough performances. I think that happens again. I'm going to say Bears 24, Washington 21.
Yeah, I picked the Bears as well. I was trying to decide if I wanted a Washington cover. I think, Hub, you have a Washington cover if the Bears win by one.
I don't even know what the spread is.
Yeah, it's, I think Dan said it's around 2.5 or 3 for the Bears, you know, giving them that home team edge. But I think this coaching staff, they've responded pretty well this season to losses. You look at, you know, responding to the Denver loss in 4 days, you know, the Vikings loss coming back and winning two games. I think they find a way to win this one 20-16.
Just for clarity, I think the Bears will win. I'm just picking 30-29 because that sounds like fun.
So it does sound like fun.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the spread. I don't know what that is.
It does. And the Bears haven't had they haven't really had a crazy high-scoring game yet this year. So their games are close. Why don't we let them see them fill up the stat sheet as well? So that does it for episode 15 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news and analysis, visit us at ChicagoFootball.com. Follow all of us on Twitter and our Bears content at Bears_Insider. Go ahead and subscribe on iTunes. Download our episodes. That way you will never miss one. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. The Silverado is ready when you are. Get a head start on the new year with special offers and check out all of the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. A big thank you to our guests on today's show, Brian McNally from 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C., and Mike Tenier of Bleacher Report. Of course, our closer, Hub Arkish, executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer Nick Intern, and my partner in crime, my co-host Arthur Arkish. I'm Kevin Fishbane. For all of us at ChicagoFootball.com, have a great week. We'll talk to you after Bears versus Washington.